We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Dan Wiederer, on-air contributor for 670 The Score.
You're going to be relying on a lot of young players, guys that have to materialize into who they thought they were.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
When either they drafted them or guys that they believe in that were already here. That's guys like Justin Fields.
Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Matt has pounded it home from the day he took the job with the HITS principle and the acronym there. And just saying repeatedly, we are going to be an effort-based football team.
Dan Wiederer.
Get your track shoes on.
With Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some football with Dan Wiederer, shall we? He's on Twitter at Dan Wiederer. The Score's Bears insider, beat reporter, and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune. Take the North podcast co-host with David Haw. He is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's happening, Dan?
How you guys doing? We've hit that home stretch here. One more week of football.
One more, and I've been following the last couple days. The Tribune has done some important work if you're a Bears fan, full roster accounting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really going through, here's the status of, for the very last guy on the roster, anybody who appeared on that roster, what the status is, what could be done going forward, how they perform this year, and it's been really helpful. So my first thought was, what little moves, little peripheral administrative things in any way for the Bears are going to be leading indicators of where they might be prioritizing, how quickly they might be moving? What are you looking for as sort of canaries in the coal mine here?
So first of all, full credit to my colleague, Colleen Kane, because that's a grind what she did. Yep. And to be able to pull that out and give you a full lay of the landscape of what they're going to be facing here in the next month gives you a pretty big picture. This is one of those rare years, though, Dan, where I don't think there are going to be those indicators that tell us much in the month of February, because they have such a blank canvas and they have so much wiggle room and flexibility and so many openings on the roster that there may not be a lot of hinting. It's just, let's get to March 13th. Let's let that flea market open. And then let's see which direction Ryan Poles wants to go first. Obviously the marriage of free agency and the draft is paramount going into this offseason, and being able to understand, okay, if it breaks this way in free agency, this is how our contingency plans look in the draft, and just kind of laying that entire puzzle out. And so we've got now just a little more than a month until we get all of that fun really escalating and getting started. And then really at the end of this month, there'll be a lot of chatter that starts to point us in directions at the combine in Indy.
Dan, after hearing Matt Nagy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of them, Lawrence, just because I think that this is an interesting topic. I mean, look, like, I think we all know why it went south for Matt Nagy here in Chicago. I think, in my opinion, and maybe it's worth discussing in this forum, that there are some things within the 2021 story that are worth illuminating in terms of what Matt was put into. I don't think his handling of Justin Fields as a rookie was the greatest, but I also don't think it was as easily condemned as it has been, just because of the problems. And again, as we've talked all month about the addition of productive oversight at the top of the organization, when you're a coach and you're basically asking for your job going into an off season, and then you're given the understanding that you better win in this season to keep your job, now you make decisions that you wouldn't otherwise make. And so the development of Justin Fields was sort of stunted because they had to try to win enough games to keep their jobs. And it's a really unfortunate thing that happened within the Bears organization that they're not going to be able to afford to have happen going forward. And so I feel for Matt Nagy on some level in that regard, because he was put in a situation that wasn't really constructive and it wasn't really fair in 2021.
Yeah, but can an argument be made that once you change course and you end up with Justin Fields, couldn't you argue that by playing Fields, he was maybe extending his timeline instead of trying to force Andy Dalton to make the team an 8-8 team?
Well, what happened when Justin played? You know, they lost 8 of his 10 starts and missed the playoffs, and he got fired. And that was going to happen. Like, the, you know, Justin wasn't going to come in, play his entire rookie year, no matter how many first team snaps he got in August, and turn them into a team that was going to contend for the playoffs. And so there is some organizational illness, I guess, within that framework that created that situation that you want to avoid entirely. Because you know, I mean, look, Justin played more. He started more than half the games in 2021, and the results were the results, because it was a rookie quarterback trying to swim uphill a little bit without the proper offseason and August development. And we wound up where we wound up. And I just think that it's the reason I think it's a valuable discussion is because if you're having these conversations in a meaningful way, well before you get to Andy Dalton scrambling out of bounds and hurting his knee, you have set up an infrastructure and a productive runway for your future franchise quarterback to develop properly, and they didn't. And here we are, we're in a totally different storyline, but now Matt's obviously in a totally different storyline, and he's coaching Patrick Mahomes and he's enjoying Super Bowl week. And then in a forum like last night, he's obviously asked to reflect and kind of look back on his time and how it ended here in Chicago.
But that's what I mean. Like, once you've put yourself in a position where you are going to draft Justin Fields, I feel like it's incumbent upon Nagy and Pace to go to ownership and say, look, this is what the plan was until this dropped in our laps. And now we need to do whatever, like, forget about trying to win. Like, we want to develop this quarterback, which means that we're going to go back on a promise that we made to Andy Dalton. And we're going to try and develop him with the reps in August to try and get him better. And I feel like if he could have gotten Fields in the second half of the season trending upward, that's a hard thing for the bosses to look at and say he deserves to be fired, even with the rest of his resume as Bears head coach.
What you describe is what happens within healthy organizations. And the reason the Bears haven't been a healthy organization is because those lines of communication, for whatever reason, get gummed up, or there aren't those discussions and there aren't those conversations and there just aren't those productive, forward-looking moves that set you up for a brighter future at the expense of a darker today, you know? And so some of those things get unnecessarily messy. And, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about sweeping away banana peels. Like, that's a banana peel that they slipped and fell on. And then, and in a way, wasted a chunk of Justin's rookie year that now puts him a little bit further behind in his development going into a third season where he's going to be asked to prove a lot, right? Like, to show them that he's worth all the money that quarterbacks in this market are going to be commanding when he gets to the end of his third season.
Is Devin Hester going into the Hall?
Man, I sure hope so. But, like, so, Dan, this is such a complicated conversation, because I had the privilege 10 years ago of being on the committee. I sat in place of Sid Hartman the year that I actually had to present.
Wow, Chris, big shoes to fill.
Terry's guy,
Sid Hartman. Yep.
In a year where I had to stand in front of that committee and present two guys, I had to present Chris Dolman and Chris Carter to the committee for consideration. And Dolman got in that year and Chris Carter didn't. And what I learned through that process, that it's really easy when Hall of Fame voting comes out to just fire grenades at the committee and say they don't know what they're doing. But when you understand the logistics of the Football Hall of Fame process, you understand that there are only five guys every year that come up for a yes or no vote. And more often than not, if you get through the velvet ropes to get to that yes or no vote, you get in. But, you know, like, there were guys that were on in my list. Like, I said, oh, these are definitely top five guys. I would vote them in right now. And I only got to vote for three of them that year. Right. So there are guys that you don't even get to take a yes or no vote on that the committee may, as at large, say Devin is, you know, 80% of us at least believe that he's an absolute Hall of Famer, but they didn't get to a yes or no vote on him. So we'll see on Thursday night whether he's in there. I would say it would certainly obviously be special for Devin to go in the class of 23. I think there's something kind of cool about that. And obviously, I think those of us who lived the Devin Hester experience through the lens of the Bears understand who he was and what he did to impact games. And I think most people that played with or against him or coached with or against him understand that as well. I just know that it's a complicated process. And in this year, right, like you've got guys like Joe Thomas and Darrell Revis, who are first-year eligible guys who will probably instantly take up two of those five spots. And so now you're down to three spots left, and you're talking about, okay, maybe does DeMarcus Ware have the momentum this year to get through? Does like a Zach Thomas get through? Is this Torrey Holt's year to break through a log jam with, you know, Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson, the other receivers? It's complicated. I think you guys are probably in agreement with me that Devin 100% belongs in there, and hopefully his time is coming soon. I just can't say for sure that it's a no-brainer for the committee given the logistics of the way the process works.
Well, I do think he belongs, and I've kind of come around on it because I initially didn't, because yeah. I thought about, you know, the whole specialist thing, and if he, granted, he's the best at doing that, but are we going to put Patrick Manley up for being the best long snapper or the best holder? You know, where do we get the slippery slope of specialization? And yet, if you really look at, like you say, change the game, affect the game, impact the game, when you're flipping the field, when you're scoring off those plays.
When teams are kicking out of bounds because they don't want to kick to you.
Yeah, I came around because I initially was very skeptical of the idea of a specialist. Like, what do we revisit Billy White Shoes Johnson and all of the other, Rick Upchurch and so many of the others? And the answer is probably not.
Right, you've got guys like Steve Tasker, right, who was a special teams, you know, dominant player for great teams. You know, Shane Leckler, a guy who punted his butt off for years. I get it. Hester just to me is different, and the impact he had. And it's not just like them kicking out of bounds. It's the amount of sweat and lost sleep that opponents had in the week leading up because they were so terrified. And I know you guys have had, I know Lawrence, you've had that conversation with Tony Dungy about just, you know, spending time and energy for an entire week leading up to the biggest game of your career, trying to figure out what do we do? Because I'm terrified of this guy, but all at the same time, I want to prove to my players that we're not afraid of them. And then what happens, right? Like on the biggest stage of the biggest game, the guy takes the opening kickoff 92 yards for a score. And you're just like, the dude was fearless. He changed games. I know there was I heard this from three different people, a punt return in the infamous game in Denver. So you obviously remember that game, but it's like a 14 yard return. And I initially heard it that the Bears, I was covering the Vikings at the time. I initially heard the Vikings special teams coach say, go back and watch this punt return in the second half of this game. And this is what I'm showing our guys over and over and over again, and how dangerous it is when you think you have him corralled and out he goes. The next year, Dante Rosario is a Bear, and he's telling me, there was this time when I was trying to cover Devin in Denver, and we had him surrounded, and he snuck out of here. Dave Toll brings up the same return, and it's a 16-yard return, right? We can watch the YouTube clips of the 20 touchdowns and then the Super Bowl return and go, yep, that looks like it. But it was all the accumulation of those 16 and 18 and 22-yard returns that made opponents, you know, crap their pants for 3 minutes that tell you how special he was and the energy that went into trying to stop him.
I'm fascinated by this Hall of Fame process, and I'm glad that now we know that you were someone that was in the room. So take me in the room. What's it like to present someone's case for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, it's intimidating to sit in that room and you know, speak to a lot of people that have been around the game for a really long time and try to get them to understand what it is about this particular candidate that sets them apart from, again, a list that is really, really established. That you know, you're going to look at this tomorrow night and you're going to see 10 guys that get snubbed and you're going to go, God, those were all really, really, really good football players. And so you just try to distinguish what made your candidate a little bit different. There's arguments to be made that, you know, maybe someone else should be presenting those cases. And I understand that completely. And you just have to do it as best you can and then see where the process takes you, because it goes from 15 down to 10. And then when you get down to 5, then you get the yes or no vote. And it's really strange to look at a list and be like, man, there's 4 guys on here that I really wanted to vote yes or no for that I don't get the opportunity to. And so then you've just got to do that. I actually went back to Minnesota after that experience. And on our blog at the time, I recruited about 75 readers of the Star Tribune and had them go through the process. And all of a sudden they stopped shouting and being like, oh, the committee's full of idiots. You know, they're like, yeah, this is really darn hard, you know, and the process is a little bit complicated and it's a little different than other Hall of Fames work. So this is kind of what it looks like.
Is there a candidate that maybe has fallen behind because of the new classes that have come behind it that you think deserves more attention with their candidacy?
Well, I've been a Torrey Holt guy from the day he got in the league, and I don't see how you can keep him out of the Hall. I just thought he was so good so quickly and so good for so long on some really, really good teams. And it just feels like a guy that he's been hanging around, right? And so, like, there's a possibility that Devin hangs around beyond this year, perhaps beyond next year, perhaps a year beyond that. And you go, man, like, I don't know, you know, how we change this to eliminate some of that wiggling and moving and shaking. But it's really interesting. That's the guy for me that right now on the list, you say, boy, I hope he gets his time sooner than later. And we'll see where it goes on Thursday night.
I don't know what your coverage responsibilities are going to be for Sunday, but I'm wondering if you – do you watch the Super Bowl like I do, where you don't make a whole day of it? You write down exactly when kickoff is scheduled for
5:37.
And if you do everything just right, you turn on the TV as the ball is in the air.
A little bit earlier than that for me, maybe a half an hour before that, just to get kind of acclimated. And you know, obviously when you're in, we don't even have our plans firmed up for Sunday, but you have to have a firm understanding of what kind of setting you're going into and where you can go to really focus on the football. There may be multiple rooms going, and you just like, I'm a guy that, like, I get it. It's a party for everybody, but I still like to watch every play of the football and feel it and understand it. And so I just got to figure out where that is this Sunday and get ready for it.
What do you think was gained by Luke Getsy being down at the Senior Bowl?
I think it's the gain was more for Luke than anybody else. I think that Luke is going to get a really nice experience of leading a group and understanding what some of the head coaching responsibilities in a shortened week look like. They're obviously going to have intel on players that were part of his team that he was able to sit in meeting rooms with, that he was able to sit in one-on-one sessions with and understand how they communicate, how they learn, how they absorb things. And so that stuff is going to be valuable when we get into April. I just wouldn't overstate it, because I think, like, the 2017 Senior Bowl included the entire Bears coaching staff, and they came back and drafted one guy, and it was Jordan Morgan, day three, lower tier guard that never played a game. So, I don't think there's any sort of, like, this is the secret code to unlocking the draft, but I think they'll have a little bit of heightened intel.
Talking to people around the league, because obviously this is when a lot of people around the league are available, depending on what they're selling or whatever. What do you feel like is the common denominator when folks are talking about the Bears?
It's the fascination in the quarterback, without question. It's boy, 2023 is going to be absolutely fun to see which direction this goes. Like, does Justin establish himself as a guy who can be your starter for the next 6 years, or does he establish himself as a championship fueling engine for the next decade? Right. And that's the conversation. And so it's like, there's an absolute fascination on the pivot point of his career and what we will learn about him in 2023 that will tell us everything about the direction of the Chicago Bears, because I think we'd all agree that he's the most important cog in this machine right now. And everybody's sort of interested to see where he goes.
Are you at a Starbucks?
I am outside of a Starbucks.
How'd you know?
I could hear the oven. You hear the oven go beep, beep, beep.
I'm actually, on days where my house is up for grabs and I can't work quietly there, I come to hotel lobbies. I'm not going to tell you which hotel I'm
at.
Good. I'm not going to give away on the air my secret spot.
But, what are you, Matt Nagy?
Yeah, right? I'm in a hidden location, and right behind me is a Starbucks, and the oven is not too far behind me.
Hotel lobbies are a life hack.
You're right about that.
For there's one specific reason.
Going to the bathroom?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm a terrible road team. I just am. I just
you
I
hate
I,
playing
I,
on the road.
I'm just bad on the road. I've always been. I've got a 75 and sunny kind of guy. So if need be, always hotel lobby.
I'm telling you, you can get a lot done. You have to find the right ones, and I've got about a rotation of about four now in the area that I can really zone in and get some work done. And so this is one of them today, but it's the lunch hour, so there's like a conference down the hall here that's letting out for lunch, and they're all stampeding behind me and making this very distracting probably for your audience.
It's like the poor man's version of having a private club where you can, you know, it's I like that. I like your way of thinking.
Have you ever walked into one of those ballrooms and gotten a croissant?
No, I've walked by it several times and thought about it really, really hard. But typically you need a name tag, and you got to figure out, where do I go? You know, like, do I have to stop at the dollar store before I get here and get a name tag that says, "Hello, I'm Dan, and I'm here to steal your croissants."
They always have leftovers, though. So.
That's right. Dan Wiederer, thank you, sir.
All right, guys, enjoy the game.
We shall. That's Dan Wiederer. And the survey that we had discussed, the James Fegan and
survey
the Athletic
says-
put out regarding the Chicago White Sox, the results are in, and they are a thing. The White Sox Nation is unhappy, to say the least. But there's one thing that brings them together. There's one positive
that
aspect
unites the masses.
That unites the angry masses.
Yeah, and we got to talk about, like, specifically who the group is that's voting on this survey is, too. Because that's really important. We will do that on the other side of a quick timeout. Bernstein, Holmes, Diaz, Mike Rankin, here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, if you needed to know what your fans thought, and I know a lot of people who are involved in businesses, some involved in sports teams, who are very pleased when a media organization does the kind of polling that can tell them valuable things. And this is one of those things where if I'm the White Sox, I am paying very close attention to the results of this poll by The Athletic.
Yeah, it's not us taking calls.
Right.
A little bit different than us. No offense to you, the caller, but there's a different level of engagement that people who are going to be involved in the Athletic survey have that those who are listening to a free radio station might not.
Now, I want to say this, too, that this is nearly 2,000 total votes.
And it's free, damn it. It's free.
Nearly 2,000 total votes. And with this particular publication doing it, you know some things here, that this isn't a full, broad sampling of White Sox fandom. This is a very specific niche. This is a group of people willing to pay for sports coverage.
Yep.
And able to pay for sports coverage. This is going to be a group that, my guess, is more educated and has more discretionary income.
I think you're probably right about that. On the whole,
that has a higher standard for some of their coverage, that they're willing to go and pay for the extra in-depth stuff that you get.
I also think that people should just get subscriptions to The Athletic because it's so good.
It's fantastic, and it makes you smarter. Yes, and it's entertaining.
Their
and it's
front
fun,
page and all of your all local great. Teams, it's phenomenal.
It's all great. But there's a reason why so many of their writers are also terrific personalities that you hear on this station and elsewhere. So we went through this, and we gave our votes last week. Or 2 weeks ago?
No, last week.
It was last week.
Thursday or Friday? One of those.
So we'll try to do this as quickly as we can here, but these were the results. What is your opinion of team chairman Jerry Reinsdorf? 72.3% said, I want change. 22.7% said, I'm not satisfied. What is the primary way you assess Reinsdorf's performance? 70.6% said, budget. 10.3% said, team culture.
Okay.
Which of these areas needs the most improvement? 85% of respondents said budget.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of how, I mean, that's where I voted too, where you got to get off of, we spent this much money and everything went wrong and you got to overspend. The point that you made at the end of the season where you were talking about, no, this is actually the time where you do go and spend after a disappointing season like that. Knowing that you've got some holes that you need to fill, and they still haven't filled them.
Where does the Sox's biggest organizational weakness lie? 56.4% of respondents said ownership. 15.7% said front office. 13.2% said player development. And I'm leaving out some of the actual excerpts of comments here, but there really were some very interesting things that were written here.
Oh, for sure. Save that for later on in the survey.
What is your opinion of Rick Hahn's performance? 54% checked, I'm not satisfied, where 32% went further and said, I want change.
I think both of those answers are fair.
How do you view Rick Hahn and the front office's work during the contention window compared to their work during the rebuild?
This was such an interesting question by James, like the way that he crafted it and the answers that were available for White Sox fans to choose from.
68.6% says he's worse at shaping a contender than rebuilding. And 24.4% said he's the same guy who struggled with both. But there's some interesting things here about misallocation of budget and specific points being made. The criticism of the team should focus on how they spend their money, not what money they are or aren't spending. It's how the team's allocated their historically high payroll should be the concern. What is the greatest weakness of the current team? This is a little more of a plurality here. The depth, 38.3%. Injury frequency, 25.9%. Team defense, 19.3%. All fair.
Agreed.
Expectations for this season. 46.8% said more mediocrity.
Wow.
That was way more pessimistic than I thought. Because I agreed with the 29.6% who said in the race until the end or cracking the playoffs. That's what I voted too. 16.8% said winning a playoff series, 1.9% World Series. Give a letter grade to the White Sox offseason.
Now, Fegan famously gave them an F.
Well, and 31.4% agreed with him. 44.9% said D.
That's where I went.
20.4% said C.
Because I think the Benintendi move is good.
The Benintendi move got a B. I was in between B and C.
That's what I mean. That's what I gave it. I gave it a B.
I thought I'd say I'd give it an 82.
Why didn't you say 83? It was right there.
Because I didn't want to give it an 83. If I thought it deserved an 83, I would have given it that. But
just like Burger King bathroom. I am being
consistent with what I believe it's an 82. 53.8% said B.
I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom.
I'm sick with this. 25.6% said C.
Ray, did you know that until like a couple years ago, Herb Lawrence didn't know that they were different, that they were the same person?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. He didn't know that Shock G and was Humpty?
Yeah, he had no idea.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, he didn't know.
He's literally wearing a fake nose and glasses.
Like a Groucho Marx mask.
They just never were in the same music video scene at the same time, miraculously.
His name was Humpty.
Seriously?
Yes. Herbie made that admission on the air.
Good for him.
That's why I love him, because he's so weird. And but he was like, I didn't know. I'm like,
did you suspect?
I mean, I don't know. I was having a hard time.
That they had this one guy on this one song that just kind of showed up and you never heard from him again?
Well, he showed up again, but,
yeah, but
they look exactly alike except for,
the plastic nose.
The Groucho Marx mask that he put on.
What did you think? What did you think of the Pedro Grifol hire? I was there on this one. 66.2 said cautiously optimistic.
I think that's what I went with. What were the other choices?
Optimistic, skeptical, hoping for someone else.
I picked optimistic.
Okay.
As long as you keep your head to the sky.
How much impact are you expecting from Grifol and his coaching staff? 65.7% says it's largely on players to improve.
Agree.
Okay. That doesn't really answer the question. Where does the White Sox biggest organizational advantage lie? And even before seeing the choices, I believe I gave you international scouting Cuban connection, and that indeed got 55% of the vote. The current Major League roster core at 24%. Which of these young White Sox players will have the best career? This is a pretty easy one because he's already off to that start. Dylan Cease.
That was my choice as well.
It has to be.
Second in Cy Young voting. As much as I really like Luis Robert, I don't know if he has enough vitamins. I don't know if his wrist is okay. I'm concerned about the boxing video. There's a lot.
Cease at 54.2, Robert 29.1, then Vaughn at 14.1, and then it drops off to Kopech at 1.3. Whoever said Gavin Sheets.
I mean, how long has Kopech been in professional baseball?
This will be a decade.
This will be his 11th year in professional baseball, right?
10th?
I think 11th.
Might be 11th. Yeah, 10th, I believe.
Young player.
Who do you think is the current favorite White Sox player of the 2,000 respondees?
T.A.
Yeah, 26.2%. Dylan Cease at 22.6. Then Robert, Hendricks, Jimenez, Vaughn, Lynn, Moncada, Giolito, Kopech, and other. The greatest strength of the current team? 56% said top of the rotation.
That's the different question, the organizational
right.
question.
That's the greatest strength of the current team, top of the rotation.
I would agree with that.
Now, here's the one here's the staggering number that I hope is printed out and placed on Jerry Reinsdorf's desk. Pick your favorite member of the White Sox broadcast experience.
Oh, so it's like everything. So it's TV and radio?
TV, radio, and studio.
How my guy Connor McKnight do?
Fine.
Okay.
He had 0.6%.
He does a good job.
I agree.
Shout out to McDoink.
Jason Benetti got 52.8% of this vote as favorite member of the White Sox broadcast experience.
Wait, 52.8. How much did Steve Stone get?
27.7. Ozzie Guillen third at 9.4.
Oh, that's good that they put Ozzie in there.
52.8.
If you're Connor, you're closer to Ozzie than Ozzie's closest to Benetti.
Uh-huh.
So that's something.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to McDoink.
But that's the one that I hope that there are some people kind of talking about. Oh boy, I had no idea.
I've been thinking a lot about this since we went through the stuff with Jason's contract and the stuff that you and I know kind of independently of what's gone on in some of those negotiations and concerns. And do you think that I think that White Sox fans have clearly like wrapped their arms around Jason. I don't think that has been the case from ownership and maybe some of the people that are inside of the front office. Do you think that I think it's really cool that a non-player has that type of impact on the audience. Because they put a premium on that. The White Sox really love having ex-players be a part of the broadcast. And seeing him win resoundingly, most of the people, if you asked them where they would rank Steve Stone as far as best analyst in the league, he'd probably be one. And the fact that they're like, he's the best analyst.
Well, when Fangraphs does the broadcast teams, you know, they're consistently top five.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. White Sox fans know that they have the best analyst in the game. And yet, according to this survey, their favorite broadcaster is a guy who didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's really interesting. And I think it also has to do with the fact that Jason is just incredibly likable. But to be able to do that on TV is hard. Being likable on the TV during a broadcast of a game that's making you crazy is difficult.
Of a fandom that's traditionally miserable.
Jason won me over forever by the way he gets the most out of Steve Stone. Like listening to Stoney and Hawk's relationship at the tail end of Hawk's career versus what has become of Steve Stone now that he's working with Jason Benetti. I appreciate him so much for that.
I always felt like there was more meat on that bone that Hawk kind of missed out on some of the things that the two of them could have done talking about the game and their histories in the game. And I get it, you know, Hawk's an icon. So, you know, you're like, man, this is my show. This guy is from across the street, blah, 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 blah. But you're right. That's one of the things that makes Jason a really good play-by-play guy. Same thing that makes Adam Amin a really good play-by-play guy. I have an analyst here. I have an expert. Let me offer up an opportunity for the expert to show their expertise.
And it's television, which means it is the domain of the expert, where radio is the domain of the play-by-play guy.
Yeah, you have to describe everything so that people understand what's going on. But you need that. Like, you need someone. Like, if you're working with Steve Stone, if you listen to interviews, for example, here on The Score, no matter who Stoney's on with, there's never any long-form questioning of Stone. You ask the question, and then you get out of the way, and you let him explain what it is that you're talking about. And that's one of the things I think is powerful about Jason as a play-by-play guy. But I do think that, I mean, I don't know if he's doing a victory lap around his condo or whatever, strange college town he's in today, but he should look at this as a victory. That even if there are people who aren't as bought in inside the White Sox, inside of 35th and Shields, the people that he's broadcasting to on a nightly basis, yeah,
the audience,
they've made their voices known, and they're like, that's my guy, and it's not close.
Really hard to get in here today.
Lastly, there's a couple other questions about prospects and such. Do you think the White Sox are headed in the right direction? The answers are yes, no, and unsure.
Well,
63.2% said no. 6.3% said yes.
Ugh.
And these are fans that are motivated enough to take a whole survey.
That's like a 12-question survey. This is one of those, is it CAPTCHA? Find the streetlights. Oh, there's a streetlight.
Check every box with an airplane.
Are you a robot?
Yes, I am. Wait, I mean, no, I'm not.
Boston Robotics.
Yeah. Oh, do you see those the robotic morning, dogs?
Morning, what's going on?
That's right, Bigsy.
Yeah, the Cylons. They hate the CAPTCHA. That's how you keep the Cylons off the phones.
Are you a robot?
I don't know. Cannot answer. Algorithm overwhelmed.
Next up, there's a weird, weird contract that just got signed that I think is entirely untenable.
Is it Jason Benetti's?
No. That contract's fine. It was just the negotiation. This is the contract that is, I've never seen anything like this in sports, and I don't see how it's viable.
I don't see how it's sustainable either. We will talk about it. If you are someone that enjoys Big Ten football, you're going to enjoy this next segment. Or maybe you won't. Back after this on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Got Tupac in the back?
Yep. Herbie probably didn't know that either. I love this song still.
It's a good album. Like the whole Sex Packets album is actually really good.
Yes, it is.
I know this song was famous, had some novelty value, but it's a good listen.
There was a video on Reels where Shock G was talking about like different rappers and like what it is that was special. And he was talking about like where their cadence comes from. And he was saying about Tupac that when he would listen to Tupac, he felt like Pac's cadence was from speech making in the civil rights era.
Okay, yeah.
And like it kind of like his flow like kind of came like you're hearing like a Martin Luther King or a Malcolm X type flow.
Speech pattern. Well, that's if you have an ear for that, the number of politicians now, the generation of politicians, like we're talking about the kids and Steph Curry and all that, the number of politicians who have the Obama cadence is incredible.
That one's pretty easy to do.
But it is so notable in so many people where you almost close your eyes and you can, you could graph it almost mathematically.
I'm sorry, I'm frozen because of my god sister's on TV. I'm like, oh, shout out to Professor Foster at Northwestern.
Oh,
the mother daughter acting team.
That's
they
cool.
were in a commercial together. So shout out to her. Shout out to Matt Parisi.
All right, so I don't know how the hell this is going to work, but you know that Iowa's offensive coordinator, Brian Ferentz, has...
embattled.
Well, that's being nice. Bad, I think. And everyone knows he's bad, and he's a Nepo baby, and that's why he still has had the job, right? And we know that there's... if it's one thing if the relationship brings you opportunity, and then you blossom.
Right.
Because
there are plenty of people who do that. Kyle Shanahan.
A lot.
For example.
In all walks of life.
Jason Bernstein.
Not yet. Oh. But in all walks of life, there are ways you say, hey, I'm privileged. And as long as you know that you're privileged, you have the opportunity, it doesn't mean you can't be terrific at it. But the problem is, Ferentz isn't. He's been really bad at it.
He's been really bad, and it feels like his dad has put a protective cloak around him instead of doing what he would do if the defensive coordinator was named Lawrence Holmes.
In the new contract, Ferentz will make a base salary of $850,000. That's down from $900,000. And will be able to have his contract reinstated to a two-year rolling agreement with a bonus and salary adjustment if the team meets certain requirements.
Like?
The team needs to score at least 25 points per game. And win a minimum of 7 games in 2023.
Didn't they win a bunch of games like 9-6
and stuff last year? To hit his goals. For him to keep his job. It is out there, public. Public that they have to score 25 points a game. Which means if you are one of the early schedule teams, the pre-conference schedule teams, and I don't
they
see...
They might run it up.
Oh, boy.
Let's see.
If you are an FCS opponent that is taking a little money, you might want to renegotiate that deal.
That depending blood on money
how
game.
Much money they're paying you to come in and hold the L. Because if this guy's like, oh, I'm going to get I can keep my job for another 2 years rolling things, so I'm going to put 70 on you if we can.
Well, I've got some bad news, though.
What's that?
Their preseason schedule not easy. Utah State, been a good program over the last decade. Then Iowa State.
Oh.
Week 2. Then Western Michigan. Then into the Big Ten slate. Let me see if there's any non-conference. No. That's not a great start.
All right.
Like, do you think that any of this is a schmoz? Like that someone just put this out here and it's not legit? Because, like, to me...
No, this is all mainstream reporting. This is
they're trying to get you to quit, fam.
But
they want you to quit.
Because they're making you look like a clown.
Yes, they are. I mean, I get it. Like, where else are you going to make that type of money? But with those stipulations, you just... And with everyone... Like, the fact that it got leaked out. It's not only that they have these stipulations in your deal... It's that magically these stipulations leaked out to the public. So now everyone can look at these games and watch the game against Utah State and be like, oh, they won 19-13 or whatever. And be like, oh, he's already behind the eight ball when it comes to his average. I actually think this is a bad look for Iowa.
Just get a different coordinator.
You could just fire him.
Just get someone who's better at it.
But part of the problem is that you have one of those guys that's created a fiefdom.
But now you've got this storyline that you've for the season where every game, every decision is now looked at through this prism. Well, we're at 6 wins now. You got to keep your job. Like this is why you would choose to make this thematic arc of your season is beyond me. How does this help anybody?
I don't know. It seems like it puts everyone in a bad spot.
How about all the offensive assistants where
and the players?
And the players where it's like, well, we gotta score. We're losing, and you know, maybe this would be a good time to run some clock. No, we can't run, we're running out of time. We gotta score.
Or
we can't run clock, we gotta throw it.
Or if you do have a game, like let's say that you are up 30-7 against Utah State late, are your players out of the game?
What if somebody gets hurt?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you end up playing these guys longer because you're trying to get more points and run up your average.
Yeah, how do you explain that to the kid and the kid's parents? Like, yeah, you know, we wanted to get him out of the game. We know we got Michigan coming up next week, but I need the points. I'm trying to keep my job.
We got
to
get the points. She's messed up, man.
Good luck. Good luck. Let's talk some Super Bowl with Sean King next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.